Parshas Shlach. Much has been written, and much has been said, and much has been attempted to explain what exactly is the way of understanding the whole story of the Meraglim. What were they thinking? What were they doing? How did they do it? We wouldn't have done it. That's always the feeling we read in Parshas Shlach. If only Moshe Rabbeinu would have sent us, we would have done a so much better job than those 10 that Moshe Rabbeinu sent. That's often the feeling that we get. Even in this week's upcoming parasha, Kerech, we read the parasha, we say, oh, if I would have been there, I would have put this Kerech down, he would have never gotten anywhere. It's very easy to think like that because we're not actually in that situation. But nonetheless, much has been written and much has been said. How to explain the story of the Meraglim, we actually did a share about it here 2 years ago on Chumash, Parasha Shlach. But I think what's more important for all of us is not what they did or what they didn't do, but what we can learn from it. You know, we're not here to wag our fingers at the Nesiim, who are, the Torah calls them Anoshim, the Torah calls them Ish, which Rashi says they were Chashiv. There's no Rashi Chumash that calls any of us Chashiv, so we're going to assume that they're greater than us. So what can we learn, what can we glean, what can we gain from the whole story for our life? So I think there's an important idea, where Rashi says, what's the connection between last week's Parasha and the beginning of Parasha Shlach? So Rashi points out the idea was that the Meraglim should have learned from the story of Miriam. Right before this story, Miriam spoke Lashon Hara on her brother. She got punished, and they didn't take any Musa from it. They saw that event, and it didn't change them. So the obvious question is, I can tell you why it didn't change them, because they said to themselves, Miriam, she's a bad person. She spoke Lashon Hara on her brother, her own brother, flesh and blood, and not only her brother, he was the God of Adar, Yeshua Rabbeinu. Who did I hurt when I came back? The Meraglim said, I spoke evil on the land of Israel. Do you think for a second the land of Israel cares what I say about it? You think the land of Israel cried? You think there was an emotional breakdown of the ground and the stones and the earth of Eretz Israel? What's the comparison? What do you want from the Meraglim? They said, yeah, I would never speak evil on a person, but there's no people involved, there's no emotions involved. So many pshatim are given. I think the answer is very simple and very relevant for our life. The root of Lashon Hara is not about whom you're speaking about, but it's about you, the speaker. When a person speaks Lashon Hara on another person, it's not so much because you're out to ruin him or you're out to spite him. You're unhappy with yourself. It's reflecting your issues. Why do they speak ill on Eretz Yisrael? Because they had an agenda against Eretz Yisrael. Why do we speak ill on people? Because we are not happy with ourselves, and the way to compensate our unhappiness is to put him down. Because if you make me unhappy because I feel inadequate compared to you, so the way I justify or I cope with that is by putting you down. So once I can put you down, then I can feel better about myself. It's therapeutic. It's almost beautiful, therapeutic, that I can put you down. So here also, when the Meraglim walked into town, they had an agenda. Eretz Yisrael is going to be evil. Not because Eretz Yisrael is evil, but they in their mind decided there's an issue that they have with the situation. Whether it's Lashma, Shalal Lashma, leave it up to the Mefarshim. But they came up with a certain perception in their mind that this is the way it's going to be. And therefore, no matter what you do, no matter what you say, this is going to be the way they perceive it, because they decided that for whatever reason they did. So it's really all about perception. Two people can watch the same event, and one person has a more of an optimistic outlook. He'll say, wow, this is amazing. The other person will say, wow, that person is horrible. You know, it's all what our perception is, and what defines our perception based on all the background information that goes along with it. Reb Elazar Silver, the famous He was really the chief rabbi of Cincinnati, but he was really more known for the work he did after the Holocaust, trying to save all those Jews that were taken in by the churches. They say over that when Rabbi Soloveitchik was asked to speak, he was supposed to give a shiur to a bunch of rabbanim, and he wanted to say a shiur in Meleches of Yom Kippur. Now, Rabbi Soloveitchik was known, that was like his expertise, was the Avoid on Yom Kippurim. He claims he knew it better than anyone else. He claims he could tell a Kohen Gadol what to do if Mashiach would have came any year. He knew everything. So someone told him, just be careful, there's one Yadir who knows it also very well. So he said, who? He said, a blazer silver. He says he knows every Taisu Shishanim in Yuma, I think by heart. Now, if you ever learned Yuma, those Taisu Shishanim are teeny. Almost, you don't even see them on the page. They're like little print. Blazer Silver knew every Taisu Shishanim. So they warned Rabbi Soloveitchik, just be careful. You know, the Blazer Silver is in the crowd. So Blazer Silver sells over a famous story with, they say it's with Eli Wiesel. What happened was, he was trying to convince Eli Wiesel one day to daven in a shul, or to daven, and Eli Wiesel said, I will never daven again in my life. He said, why? He said, because I remember when I was in the camps, and there was one Jew that had a sitter. Simon Wiesel, that's right. I don't know why I had it in my notes, Eli Wiesel, that's more correct. So that's right. So what was the story? So he said, I was in the camps during the Holocaust, and there was one Jew that smuggled in a sitter, and I remember the long lines of Jews waiting online to use the sitter, and this fellow would charge. The little food, the little bread that we had, we used to have to give to him so we could use our sitter.
And he said to himself, I was so turned off that a Jew, in the situation of the Holocaust, in the situation that we're in, can use the Siddur to make a profit, to take the little food that we have and use it to, for his personal gain. I was so turned off, I said, I never want to hear from it again. So Blazing Silver turned to him and said, why don't you look at it the other way? Why don't you see all those Jews who gave up the small little food that they had? The little that they had, they gave up to serve Hashem. Look at beautiful Klal Yisrael, Mikam Chai Yisrael. It's all about how we look at things. Now again, we're not here to judge, Chas V'Shalom, what those Yidden went through. It's horrific. But very often in life, two people can come to this exact same situation, watch the exact same situation, and they'll both walk away with very different feelings. Why? Because it's our perception. What makes up our perception? All the background that's going on in our lives. If we're angry, if we're upset, if we like the person, we don't like the person, that all impacts the perception that we have on the situation. So the Meraglim were teaching us that Lashon Hara very often is not rooted so much in the other person, it's really rooted in us. Because we are unhappy, or we feel that the other person is better, or we feel this, that, the other. 9 out of 10 times, if we were comfortable in our own shoes, there's much less of a motivation to speak Lashon Hara. I think one of the strongest reasons we speak Lashon Hara is because we hear something about someone else, and we don't like what he has because I should have it. So the way we cope with it, from a psychological angle, is to put him down. If we say, I'm so happy for him, great, terrific. So there's no reason to bash him. What do I gain by putting him down? Because I'm very comfortable in my own shoes. Now, where do we see that the Meraglim were not comfortable in their own shoes? The Pasuk says that they come back and they say that we appeared in the eyes like kachagavim. So Rashi says, how do you know how they thought of you? So Rashi says, oh, we overheard them. The Bali Musa say, no, you perceive yourself the way you think people perceive you. They walked around saying to themselves, oh, we're nobodies. When you start off with that feeling, you're not comfortable in your own shoes. That's going to lead you to a point where you're not going to make decisions properly because you're not in a good place. You feel like you're inadequate. When a person feels inadequate, he often makes decisions that are reflective of that. Mitzat Sheni, we don't want to be a Bali Gaiva. We don't want to walk around like we own the world. That's that happy balance of realizing who you are and knowing what you are and embracing. Say over a story with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein was having a discussion with a fellow about a certain halachic shayla, and Rav Moshe Feinstein said, it's this. And the Yid said, no, it's not that. Rav Moshe said, it's a prima garden. The Yid told Rav Moshe, it's not a prima garden. Now, for the record, I would never tell Rav Moshe Feinstein. If Rav Moshe Feinstein told me that it says whatever it says anywhere in the Torah, I would just trust him, because he's Rav Moshe Feinstein. So the guy said, no, there's no such prima garden. So Rav Moshe turns to him and says, I learned that prima garden 296 times. Trust me, it's a prima garden. Now, that wasn't Rav Moshe being a Baal Gaiv. That was Rav Moshe saying, I know who I am. I know what I am and I know what I can do. When a person is comfortable in their own shoes and they realize their miles and their chesreinus, there's really no reason to put other people down. Why? I'm very happy that you exist and I'm very happy that I exist. It's usually when we're uncomfortable. And that's really what I think the lesson of the Meraglim is, that we have to be more comfortable in our own who we are. We should be proud of what we are. We should embrace what we are. We should be excited for what we are and not who we're not. But there's an ironic twist, really, to the whole story of the Meraglim. Many people point this out. The entire Mikar that we need to have 10 Jews to make a minyan is learned that from the Meraglim. And if you've ever had to try to get a minyan together, you are so thankful that there was only 10 Meraglim. Can you imagine if there was like 15? Forget it. I'm saying, my morning is Shachris and Maishal, we count heads every morning. I'm like, Baruch Hashem, they only sent 10. And there was 12 and 10, you know, if there'd be more, forget it. It'd be that much more difficult. But it's an ironic thing. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide to bring out such an important point of minyan, Davar Shebikdusha, from a group of people that were not such a great group of people? Couldn't you have found somewhere else in the Torah to bring out the point? So I think the answer is no. This is exactly why it's here. What's the whole idea of Lashon Hara? It's divisive. It breaks us up. The 10 Meraglim represent division. They try to split Klal Yisrael. You can't find another different procedure in the world that brings random Jews together than a minyan. You ever go to a minyan and everyone in the room is different? You have a Chassidish guy, Sfarish guy, one guy wearing a hat, no hat, shorts, this, and they all get together and they all make a minyan. It's an amazing thing. I think even more like in the summertime, where everyone's just like scattered around the world and going on vacation and a bungalow column. Everyone's in just different places. And you all get together and you look around the room and you say yourself, there's not one person here like another person. Everyone is so different. And that's the idea. The Meraglim tried to divide us with Lashon Hara, split the nation, split the country. We come together with 10 and say, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not divisive. We're not divided. We're all one. We look different. That's okay. Because we could be different. Our differences is not what sets us up. It's not what divides us. We're allowed to be different because we're all comfortable in who we are. I'm very proud of being my style of Yiddishkeit and your style. You don't stuff your mahalach down my throat and I don't do the other. Vice versa. So it's bedavka, something like a minyan, is when we all come together to show that we're not going to be divided over our differences, but instead we're going to unite and realize we can't get anything really done separately. We can stand in a room by ourselves all day long. We won't be able to learn from the Torah. We can't say Kaddish. You can't learn. You can't bring. You can't. You could be the biggest, most chashuv yid in the world. he won't be able to accomplish it. So we realize that we can only accomplish great things when we're together. So instead of using the idea of the Meraglim to divide us, which the Meraglim's intent was, we decide instead to come together with the Meraglim. So I think that's perhaps what we need to think about as we are Mevarchim Chodesh Tammuz yesterday. So Tammuz really, for most of us, starts to think about the 3 weeks. But even though it's hard to imagine, now we just, you know, school just finished, camps are getting started, summer, but it's not too far away where we're commemorating the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Mr. Birra writes that when the Gemara says about Metziah, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sin Haskinam, it doesn't just mean because people, you know, were mean to each other, it means Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is the root of the sin. So if we can eradicate that, we can eradicate the reason for the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. As a Gevaldik Gevar from the Satmar Rebbe, it's worth mentioning in case you ever have to speak like a family simcha or something, or off the, you know, without time to prepare. It's a Gevaldik Gevar to remember. Satmar Rebbe says that what did they tell them? To come back and bring the fruits. Says Rashi, why? Because he wanted to know if there are any ksherim in Eretz Yisrael. So the question is, what's the connection between the fruits and the tree? It says, bring the trees. So bring trees back. Why do you bring back fruits? So the Satmar Rebbe says, if you want to know if a person is really a kosher, don't look at him. Look at his peiros. Look at the next generation. If a person, it's hard to tell what he is. If you want to know if this person is an ish kosher, don't bring me back the tree. The tree is him. I don't want to see him. I want to see the next generation. Bring me the peiros. Bring me the fruits. I used this out of Shalom Zachar last year when I was completely cut off guard that I had to speak and it fit really nicely. Don't look at the tree. Don't look at the person. You want to testify on a person's kashrus? Says the Satmar Rebbe, look at his peiros. That's what the Meraglim were told, bring back the fruits. We don't want to see the tree. We want to see the peiros. A person can live one certain lifestyle, but if you want to define who a person is, you look at his children. That really defines who he is. As we speak very often about Rav Moshe's idea of how you mechanech your children, that's the way you're supposed to live. So if you live a life of kosher, then your children should have hopefully adapted that way as well. It's a great, great vart if you're ever caught off guard to have to speak at a family simcha. And then the other vart from this week's parasha, which you also remember, if you have to speak at a family simcha, is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's famous vart. We mentioned it in the parasha here. It's always worth mentioning. You can always use it if you get in trouble with your wife. Rabbi Yaakov asks the kasha, why is it that Hashem davened for Yeshua? Why did Moshe daven for Yeshua and not for Kalev? Says Rabbi Yaakov, because Yeshua didn't have a special wife. Kalev had a very special wife. Her name was Miriam. And Isha Chashuva, when one has a very special wife, she will protect you from sin. Moshe Rabbeinu knew Kalev didn't need the extra tefillas because she knew Miriam. Although I don't think Miriam came on the trip. As far as I know, it wasn't a mixed trip. I think it was a separate city trip only. No women were invited. But nonetheless, Miriam was that type of a wife that Moshe Rabbeinu felt comfortable saying, I know Kalev is not going to mess up because he's got a good wife who's had that bug in his head saying, don't do it, Kalev, bad idea, you know? So therefore, Kalev, Yeshua didn't have that wife. Yeshua was a single fellow. So therefore, Yeshua needed the extra tefillah while Kalev did not need the extra tefillah. So that's another great vart to say if you ever need to speak at a family simcha or you just did something really bad and you want to score major brownie points with your wife. Great vart to bring home to say. Just to wrap up the Kliyakar in last week's parasha, very controversial Kliyakar. Kliyakar says that Moshe Rabbeinu would have preferred, Hashem would have preferred to send 12 women to be the spy at Eretz Yisrael. Can you imagine today in today's society that would be so controversial? 12 women going on behalf of Klal Yisrael? That would never fly today. But Hashem says, I'd rather 12 women. Why? Because women love Eretz Yisrael more than the men. So the Kliyakar says. But I always thought the Pshat was slightly different. Not that the women love Eretz Yisrael, but women are much more optimistic than men. Men by nature are pessimistic people. Women are much, much more optimistic. Everything is much better in their eyes, especially spiritually speaking. That's why in Mitzrayim they were much more optimistic than we were. By Bechet Meraglim, by Bechet Ego they were much more optimistic. We, the men, are the ones who are guilty. So in order to fix our optimism or to get work on our optimism, I think it's kedai to learn from our spouses to be a little bit more optimistic. Just one last word on just to understand the Chet HaMeraglim, the Birchas Avram Erlinger points this out. So if you think about it, this was the first time that Shevet Levi got caught up, swept up in sin. Shevet Levi was able to hold their own in Mitzrayim, they didn't do anything wrong. No Avodah Zarah, no nothing. The Chet HaEgel, Shevet Levi stood on the side. The first time Shevet Levi got caught in sin was the Chet HaMeraglim. That's how powerful it was, that it even swept up Shevet Levi, this perfect Shevet, the innocent Shevet, the one that we always turn to and say, okay, at least they didn't do it, says the Birchas Avram, they got caught in this also. So that's how powerful the Chet HaMeraglim, how long-lasting its impact was, but that it was even able to sweep up and consume Shevet Levi, who for the most part was able to stay out of controversy, it caught them as well. Okay, so we're holding over here in the sugya of Atafas Dam Bris. We're trying to understand exactly what this procedure that's discussed in the sugya about people that need to have a mila, but for some reason the mila didn't work or can't work, what do they do next? So we have a Gemara Be'os in Shabbos. We'll read the Gemara quickly, and then we'll try to get back into the sugya. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara makes a drasha that Or Lo Soy Vade Deches Shabbos V'Lo Noilad Kishu. The Gemara makes a drasha that it says in the Torah B'Yem Hashmini Yimol Besar Or Lo Soy, you should give a Bismillah to his Arlo. So the Gemara makes a drasha that what? An Arlo Vade Deches Shabbos. It has to be a for sure Arlo V'Lo Noilad Kishu Mol Deches Shabbos. But a Noilad Mahol, the baby's born without what at least seems to us as a no Mila. We assume that that Mila is not Deches Shabbos. Then we have Machlokes Beshamay Sil. Beshamay says Tarach Latif Man Dam Bris. The baby's born without an Arlo, so you have to do something. You have to be Matif Dam Bris. We mentioned last week it's Machlokes Achreidim. What exactly do you do? So you make some form of a cut, a prick, and blood should come out. Ubeisil Man Tarach Beisil said you don't have to do anything. Why? Because Noilad Mol is Noilad Mol. There's nothing to do. So we have Machlokes Beisham Beisil. What do you do with a baby that's Noilad Mol? According to Beishamai, you got to do something. According to Beisil, you don't do anything. Now the Gemara doesn't tell us where Beis Shammai is coming from and where Beis Hillel is coming from. So where Beis Hillel is coming from, it's simple. If Hashem says cut off this and this is not here, so then you do nothing. The Beis Shammai says even though you could, but you can't do it on Shabbos. That's the chiddush of Arlo Seivade v'Arlo Safik, that this procedure can't be done on Shabbos. Now Beis Shammai doesn't tell us where he came up with this idea that he's supposed to do Hatovas Men and Dam Bris. Meaning you can't cut off the milah. So maybe you should, you know, cut off a piece of hair on the baby. I don't know. It doesn't say anything in the Torah. The Torah says do a bris milah, yeah.
Does Beis Shammai say you have to do it on the eighth day?
So the assumption would be it should be done on the eighth day. We'll talk more about that as well. The question again, the million-dollar question is, what is this Hatavas Dam Bris? Is it in the place of milah or is it a procedure onto its own? Is it supposed to replace a milah when a milah can't be or wasn't done? Or is it a procedure on its own? It's a different, separate concept in the maisa milah that cut off the foreskin. And on top of that, blood should somehow come out from that part of the body. Then the Gemara goes on, Amr Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Lenechluk Beisham Beisol. Rav Shimon ben Elazar has another opinion that this Machlokes Beisham Beisol is not on a case Al Noilad Kishu Humol, Shetarach Lat Dam Bris. Everyone agrees that if the baby was born noiled, you have to do it. Why? Because we're choishish that maybe, although it looks like to us that there's no foreskin there, maybe it somehow got embedded to the skin, that's what Rashi explains it, and therefore it's somehow like merged with the skin, and there's really an Arlo there. So you have to do something because there might really be an Arlo there that you're missing, which is a pashtus would make it a suffik deraisa. Suffik oral, you have to take off the orla because it might be there. So alma nechlegu, so where's their point of disagreement? Al ger shenisgara kishu humol, if you want to take a person who wants to become Jewish, but he already had a bris milah when he was a baby, his parents gave him either a medical bris or a religious bris, but it wasn't on kedasu kedin, and now he wants to join Judaism. So we're going to see, hopefully later today, Rabbi Salavechik has a gevaldik hakira. What exactly is the role of milah in geirus? What's the purpose? Is the milah make him Jewish? Or is that in order to be Jewish, you have to be gemalt? That's why Rabbi Salavechik is clear. Of how do you understand the rule? Everyone knows that part of the steps of becoming Jewish is milah, tefillah, kabbalas ha-mitzvahs. Now, is that because tefillah, okay, we all know tefillah is what makes you Jewish. That's the difference. The tefillah is what gives you Kedushas Yisrael. Does the milah also give you Kedushas Yisrael? Or the milah is, well, you can't be Jewish unless you have a milah. So you need to have a milah so you can join Klal Yisrael. But the milah is not what makes you part of Klal Yisrael. Basically, is the milah a chelik of the Maisei Geiris, or the milah is not a chelik of the Maisei Geiris? So we'll see how that's going to be very relevant in the sugya. And Rabbi Salavechik has many nafkiminas lahalacha. One of the most simplest nafkiminas is, do you need a bezdin for the Maisei Milah? For the tevilah, for the Maisei Geiris, you need a bezdin. But if milah is not part of the Maisei Geiris, milah is just, in order to become a ger, you need to become a not an oral. So it's really a side issue. It's not a chelik of the geirus, so you don't need a bezin for it. Right, it's like a hechsher mitzvah type of thing. I mean, you can't be Jewish if you're an oral. So I need to remove the oral so I can become Jewish. But that's not what makes me, it's not the geirus process. The geirus process is done by tefillah. Going into the mikvah is what makes you Jewish. So we'll see how that's going to be very relevant in our sugya, a very important chakir. So,
I don't know if this is. We always say Yom Ralach and Damai Chayib Yom Ralach, and I seem to remember that there's some sort of a heckish between that and the Dam Al Hamashko. Isn't that the meaning maybe of having a Dam at any
situation? So we're going to talk about it, right? There's a Tosfos in the Dorm like that, that we're going to see that there's something intrinsic about having blood. Not that blood is a part of this process. And that's what we're going to develop hopefully sometime today. That might be a tavas dam bris, might be a thing on its own. Not only to replace a maisa milah, but it might be a procedure to itself. There's some act. Whenever we do certain types of bonding with us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, although it sounds very weird, there's an act of blood that needs to be exchanged or to be taken out. So the Gemara says they're not arguing about Noilad Mol, they're arguing about Ger. So, this is very negiah halacha l'maaseh. According to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, If a baby is noil and mol, of course he needs to have hatavas dambris. Where is there a point of disagreement? The point of disagreement is only by ger. Then the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, "Itma Rava ma halacha ketanakama." Rav says we pass him like the Tanakama. Who's the Tanakama? The Tanakama was the one who thought it's Machlokes Beisham Beiselul if Noilud Mohol needs that Tavas Damris. So according to the Tanakama, according to Rav, we pass him like the Tanakama. So the Machlokes between Beisham and Beiselul is by Noilud Mohol. Who do we pass him like in Machlokes Beisham Beiselul? Beiselul. So according to Rav, one does not need to do a Tavas Damris when the baby's born already gemalt. What do we hold about Ger? We don't know. Rav was only commenting about the machlokes in the Tanakama. The Tanakama never talked about a ger. He only talked about a noilad mol. So if we paskel like Rav, who paskels like the Tanakama, we don't know where he stands about a ger. We at least know where he stands on a noilad mol. Ushmuel oimer halach kibshem ben alazer. But Shmuel holds like kibshem ben alazer. What did kibshem ben alazer hold? Kibshem ben alazer holds a noilad mol. Of course you need a tafiz dambris. The machlokes is only by ger. So now we have a machlokes Rav and Shmuel, who we paskel like. Now, who should we paskin like based on the normal klali ahira when Rav and Shmuel disagree? This is not mominous, so we're not going to go like Shmuel. This is dinim, so we should go like Rav. If we go like Rav, it should equal that a noilad mohol does not need a bris, and a gerish this guy we don't know. We don't know, because Rav never addressed it. Then the Gemara goes on to tell us a story which we saw before. When this rest of the Gemara we already saw about the baby that Rav, that Rav Adda decided to give his baby a hatavas dambris, and Nebuch ended up creating a cross shuf. Okay? That's basically the cheshbon in the Gemara. Now, Tosfos, before we see Tosfos, we mentioned this last week as well. Again, if you just looked at this Gemara, what's the common denominator between Gerish and Isgayer and Noil and Mohol? They're both people that can't have a regular bris. So when you read this Gemara, you say to yourself, the whole Atavas Dan Bris only comes to discussion when you have a situation where you can't do a regular bris, either because it's not there or because it was removed incorrectly. So now you have to start figuring out, is there some form of a replacement? Can I do Atavas Dan Bris to replace an incorrect Arla? But to say to yourself that something, let's say for example you have a regular baby that has an Arla, and you'd cut off the Arla and no blood would come out. Would anyone say, no, the bris is no good, he didn't have a tavas dambris? Of course not. That's not one of the requirements to a bris mila. The whole discussion in our Gemara is when you can't do the regular mila of just cutting off the Arla, now you gotta start coming up with these new creative replacements. Right? The Pashup Shad is that tavas dambris is a replacement. So machlokes is when do you need a replacement, when you don't need a replacement. But when you don't need to replace anything, so then you go back to the regular rule of thumb, which is just cut off the Arla. We mentioned last week, number two, there's a Rashi in Shabbos, Kuf Lamed Daled, a block before our Gemara, where Rashi talks about a baby that was green, and the baby couldn't have a bris mila done to it because it was green. Why? Why can't a baby that has a blood issue have a bris mila? So Rashi says, two pshatim. Rashi says, tarta le griusa, chada, the imol loinofik minei, dama, because this baby has apparently some form of a blood issue, that even if you would cut off the foreskin, it's a regular baby. The baby has a regular urla like any other baby. But if you were to cut that urla off, no blood would come out. So Rashi, if no blood comes out, yes, you can't do that. Va'atofas dam bris mitzvah. The idea of a tavas dam bris is a mitzvah. The Chassid quotes a pasuk in the Navi. Very important. The pasuk in Navi. Why is that important for us to know that it's a pasuk in Navi? Because that makes it only derabanan. As Rabbi Weiss points out, that generally speaking, things that are found in the Navi are not derais. So at best, if there is a din of a tavas dam bris, it would only be midirabanan. The Chassid gam as a bedom brisach. So what do you see from Rashi? That not that Atavas Dam Bris is a replacement of Mila. It's a procedure on its own. Every Bris Mila, besides for cutting off the foreskin, there also has to be another procedure called blood comes out. Because that's a chelik of our bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu with blood. So according to this Rashi, it's not just a pshat that Atavas Dam Bris is to replace a Mila. It's a chelik of the Mila. Every bris has two parts. So just like you have to do Mila and Priya, you cut and you pull back. So you have to cut and have blood come out. That doesn't seem like argumar. Argumar seems like Hatavas Dam Bris is only an option when you're trying to replace a mila. But when you have a regular mila, that's all you need. It's Rashi, it's a Gavaldi Gechidish. Rashi seems to be saying that there's a concept of Hatavas Dam Bris on its own. That every bris mila, lichshala atzma, every bris mila on its own, needs some form of level of Hatavas Dam Bris. Then the question...
But by quoting this pasuk in Nach, you're saying it's only the Rabbanan?
The assumption is things...
Well, it's not a great raya.
So the question just is there a way to plug this back into the Torah? Meaning, we'll talk a little bit more about this in Yerushalmi, that this might be a giloy that I can plug back in. But we'll see in a second how that perhaps works.
But as of now, we're holding that Rashi believes it's the right, a separate procedure.
Well, again, it's hard to be the right if it's not in the Torah. things in the Navi at best are derabbanan. So the assumption would be is that there's a din derabbanan that every bris milah needs to have blood coming out of it. Now the truth is, we'll talk about the halacha on ice. There's a tshuva for Rav Moshe I put over here on the, just because it's three pages doesn't mean we're getting to all three pages. Because I don't want anyone to feel like, I don't want anyone to think this is the whole Sunday afternoon over here. I just figured if we can get to it, it might be nice to get to as much as we can get to. So again, according to Rashi in Shabbos, it sounds like it's a din on its own. Every bris milah requires blood to come out because that's part of the way we form a bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Asher Weiss is mitzayin to a Tosfos in the Darim. I don't want anyone to think I knew this one on my own. He quotes a Tosfos in the Darim, Daf Lamed Aleph. If you saw in the Darim, the Tosfos are really small print on the side. See, it's really hard to find them. So there's a Tosfos in the Darim that makes the comment like this. It says over there, Hinei dam abris ha-shekaris. So the Gemara says, he's referred to a Gemara in Krisus. The Gemara says in Krisus that Klal Yisrael became Jewish through a different through a Geirus, and they had different steps and parts to the Geirus. So it says over here, Afagav the Pashtei the Krab Hatzos Dam and Bedam Shenasa Moshe Be'etzva Mishtoi. The pasuk says over there they had dam. There was blood involved. So Pashim said the blood was the blood on the Karbonis that was sprinkled on the people. Mikomoki Muki the Nami Bedam Mila. Says Taisus, no, it also included the Dam Mila. Kishenichnasim Lebris. So Pashim Shat, I think Rashi learns over there, the other Rishonim learn, dam doesn't mean blood of the Mila, it means dam from the carbon. Moshe Rabbeinu brought a carbon, he sprinkled it on the people. Says Taisus, no, it means the dam Mila. Metzinu dam Mila, kari dam bris. Dechsev hine dam habris. So says Rabbi Shabbai, what is he from Taisus? He's even telling us that a tavas dam bris is not merely a replacement of a bris, it's a chelik of every bris milah, or at least every geiris bris milah. There's an element over here, when you have a bris milah, there's a musig of having blood be spilled. That's part of the procedure. It's not enough just to cut off the skin, because you see over there, Klal Yisrael became Jewish through not just a milah with hartzas dam.
It's a separate entity.
That's right.
Mila,
tefila, and that's right. The question is, where did that blood come from? He's assuming the blood at least is connected to the Mila. You say, well, maybe we have to, you know, split, cut our finger, and that would be the dumb. So Tyson is assuming that blood is connected. But the way Rabbi Shavai writes it, he says it's two separate dinim. Don't look at it as, well, you need a Mila, and when you can't do a Mila, then the fallback is that tavas dam. No, there's Mila, A, then there's the next step, because every Mila needs to have dam. If this is correct, so then Rav Moshe has a tshuva on page 2. It's a little out of order. Rav Moshe finds it as a tshuva in English Moshe, where he was talking about the clamp. Right, this is a big discussion amongst Moyim about the clamp. Apparently there was a way of using a clamp to do a milah where there no blood would come out. So Rav Moshe got it right at the end of the tshuva. He doesn't see how this is possible, that no blood would come out. But the question was, if you could do a bloodless milah, would that be a kosher milah? No blood. Clean cut. Again, whatever. No blood at all. So Pashup Shah, you'd say, of course that's a kosher milah. Why is that not a kosher milah? But according to that, Rashi and Taisa that we just saw, that a Tavas Dam Bris is not just a replacement of the Arla. It itself is the procedure of milah, then the Chayr, it's not a kosher bris. So Rabbi Shavai says, one second. According to Rashi, it's only be...
Yeah, you're just stopping it. It's not like this.
Right. So in that case, but the mice, it didn't come out. Whether or not you would have liked it to come out.
It did come out. You just stopped it.
If you hold it, you need to have the blood come out. So again, I mentioned last week that a Moyel told me that I think the Chazon Ish, if it forms a black and blue mark, so that's good enough because the blood at least pooled to the top, but that didn't come out. If you hold a Tavas Dam Bris Mamish is a requirement for blood to come out of the wound for some reason, then it shouldn't work. So if you look over on page 2, number 9, if Moshe writes, b'dover mila, b'machshir kazeh, she'in yoytze dam kal, no blood comes out, pashut she'in l'mol bo, you can't use it. The Tavas Dam hu gam came medini ha-mitzvah de mila. So if Moshe, because a Tavas Dam Bris is one of the parts of the mila. It's not merely a replacement. Why? What's his rise? And these are things we still need to come back to. We're still en route to get to the said Jemoshe that Rechazina should be Nimo Shloi Kedin Tzrichalat Dam Bris. From every single person that was Nimo Shloi Kedin, he needs to have a Tavas Dam Bris. Ketisa B'Ramasim Reisham Achvesev Alf. Ba'avar Mo B'Lailo B'Shach Shem Sukam Beis Mo Toches B'Mo Akum. Vine Im Loi Hayshayich La Hamitzvah Klal. If you held, it's not connected to the mitzvah. Loi Hayshayich Zeh. Ramosh is assuming the fact that Atavas Dam Bris is a replacement, it only makes sense to be a replacement if it itself is a chelik of it. We would have argued. We would have thought, no, it's a replacement when you have nothing else to do. But if you have another option, meaning you have an Arla to cut off, cut the Arla and you'll be done. Ramosh is assuming not like that. Ramosh is assuming from the fact that Atavas Dam Bris is an option to replace, it must be it somehow is a chelik of the Mila. Because why else would something that's so foreign be able to be used as a replacement? So therefore, Rav Moshe passes the halacha l'maaseh that you need to have. Now, this Rav Moshe, I don't remember if he quotes this Rashi, but according to this Rashi in Tosfos, it's very geshmak. Not because it's a replacement, because a tavas dam bris might be a dover lichshel atzmoi. It's not a thing on its own. Where do you see it from the pasuk in Navi, or perhaps you see it from Tosfos in the Dar? Now, we mentioned last week there's Yerushalmi. This is a very, very important Yerushalmi. Let's read it again, number 4. Says Yerushalmi, Rav Omar Himol Yimol. says in the Torah, himol, yimol. So the way the Mefarshi Yushalmi learn it, it's from the fact that it says himol means even though someone who's already gemalt, yimol, he should still do a bris milah. So the obvious question is, how can someone who already had a bris milah do a bris milah? Says Yushalmi, mikan lenoilat kishu mol, shetzarech lahetav mena dambris. So you learn from over here that if someone that was noilat mol, he has to have atavas dambris. So Rav Asher Weiss points out that this is already a big nafkamina lahalacha. According to Yushalmi, noilat mol is learned from a pasuk. According to Rashi in Daf Kuf Lamed Daled, the concept of atavas dambris would be derived from a pasuk in Navi. So that's a simple nafkamina. Rav Asher Weiss assumes, and you could debate this, that according to Yushalmi, this is a din d'oraisa. It's learned from himo. Maybe, yeah, maybe it's a smachta, I don't know. But what's even more interesting is the Bavli never mentions it. The Bavli never makes this drush. This is Yerushalmi Dikka drush.
Well,
so,
well, that could be different between
there. So we'll see in a second. Here he's talking about a Neulin Mo. Then he goes on, he says, he learned from a pasuk. Mikan Yisrael Arush. Okay. Then he goes right to Yerushalmi and he writes, the Gershon is Garak, the Neulin Mo'ol. The Gershon is Garak Yishu Mo'ol. Let's say you have a Gershon is Garak Yishu Mo'ol. Tzarech Lehetiv Min Adambris. He needs to do a Tavad Dambris. Tanya Omer Ibshem Min Alozer, Lei Nechel Kobe Shaman Beis Elol, Neulin Kishu Mo'ol, Shetarech Adambris, Shehu Al Kvusha, Amal Nechel Kobe Al Gershon is Garak Mo'ol, Shebe Shaman, Shetarech Beis Elol, Yimei Netzarech. What's the second half of Yushalmi? The second half of Yushalmi goes like Ibshem Min Alozer. What did Ibshem Min Alozer say? That there's an issue of Orla Kvusha. That everyone agrees that a Neulin Mo'ol needs to have a Bismillah because of Orla Kvusha. The other sheet is, Gershon's guy does not have Orla Kvusha. So ask Sib Yaakov Kamenetsky, is a steer in the Yushalmi. The beginning of the Yushalmi starts telling you that a Neulin Mo'ol needs to have a bris because of Himo Yimo. But if you go like Ibshem Min Alozer, that the reason why you need to have a bris is not because of Himo Yimo, you need to have a bris because it's a Suffolk Orla Kvusha. So according to Shimon Alaza, you know why a Neulin Mo'ol needs a bris? Because he's a Suffolk Orla. Yeah?
He's right, the Rambam, that...
Suffolk writes. We'll come back to that Rambam. Okay, keep that in mind. But we're on page 3, we're going to deal with the Rambam Shita. Keep that in mind. It's going to come up very, very relevant in the Rambam Shita. Yeah, Bilinedo will get to that, hopefully. So Frek to Biakiv, the two halves of Yushalmi don't connect. First half of Yushalmi is telling me what? It's telling me that the reason why you have to give a bris to a Neulin Mo'ol is because Himo Yimol, which we'll call a Din Bifnei Atzmai. Now you're telling me at the end that we go like Ibshim Ben Elazar. According to Ibshim Ben Elazar, why does a Neulin Mo'ol need a bris? Because he's a Suffolk Arla. So why do I need a Pasuk of Himo Yimol? That's every Suffolk. Suffolk that writes a little Chumra. So Rabbi Yaakov actually has two kashas. The first kashas that Rabbi Yaakov asked was asked here last week. I didn't even think of it, but I heard it here mentioned last week. If you look right under number 4, he writes in Emes Liyakev, Vihine, Yesh the Dakti B'divi Yerushalmi. The Mulvad the Yerushalmi Sover Rav Tzarech Lahat Min Adam Bris, Afilu B'Shabbos V'U Negra Bavli. Question number 1 is the steer between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Rav, an argument, what did Rav say? Halacha Kitana Kama. What did the Tana Kama hold? That Neulin Mo'ol is Machlokes B'Sham and Beis Hillel. We assume Machlokes B'Sham Beis Hillel, we pass him like Beis Hillel, that you don't need a Tavas Dambris. What did Rav say in our Gemara? You need to have a Tavas Dambris. So it's a Stira in Bavli and Yerushalmi. So Rabbi Yaakov writes, that commentaries in Yerushalmi already deal with. The Gemara, the Don Savar, the Alok Tana Kama, the Beis Hillel, Afilu B'Choyel, and Tzarech Lahatif. Okay, that's a good kasha. Then Rabbi Yaakov has a second kasha. Gam Yushalmi gufa divi Rav Soysim Adodi. Even in Yushalmi, there's a contradiction. The kibun the pasuk Rabbi Shimon Elazar devar the Orla Kavusha. Now that you tell me we pass them like Rabbi Shimon Elazar, that we're worried that it's an Orla Kavusha, and that's why everyone holds you need to do a bris on an Orla Mo'ol. Imkin amat zarech l'ribe atavas dan bris mihimo yimo. So why do I need a pasuk anymore? If I have a pasuk, why do I need a pasuk for? If you tell me Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds every Orla Mo'ol is a suffik Orla Kavusha. So you have a suffik derais in hand. You have a baby born that there might be an orla here. So of course you have to do the bris milah. Why do I need a pasuk to tell me that he needs a bris milah? That's Rabbi Yaakov's kash. So Rabbi Tzal Zolti in the Sefer Mishnas Yavitz. Yeah.
Because on the other side is there kavala?
Could be.
So maybe you wouldn't say in case of a suffik suffik.
Something the Raisa versus, it's a good point, perhaps. And that's really part of the discussion where we're skipping this part of the sugya, but if you want to learn on your own, that Taisa is about what's the chiddush of Suffolk Arla versus Vadi Arla. The Gemara says, Vadi Arla veloy Suffolk Arla. So Taisa is al kasha. Well, why not? What happened to the old girl fashion rule of Suffolk Arla? So Taisa over there works at some of these types of cheshbonos.
This Suffolk is the greatest Suffolk because it's a curries.
Yeah, a carrot. Could be. It's stronger than others assume, like Chaval. So Rabbi Tzal Zolti wrote a sefer called Mishnas Yavitz. It's really Shas and Chuvis. Rabbi Tzal Zolti was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. He took over after Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank. They say Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank was so beloved that they couldn't take a rabbi for 10 years. And they finally, after 10 years, they were able to find someone else. They ended up taking Rabbi Tzal Zolti as their chief rabbi. And he didn't die so long ago. I think he died in 1980, 1977, Rabbi Tzal Zolti. To fill up Tzvi Pesach Frank's shoes was so hard because Tzvi Pesach Frank was such a rabbi. He lived for his people. They say he didn't start his Pesach Seder until like a half an hour before Chatzos. Why? He said, because halacha is if a rav who drinks wine is not allowed to pass in shaylas. So he was so afraid that someone might come to the middle of the seder with a shayla, he couldn't start the Pesach seder. So he had to wait till Mamashi was up against the clock because he was waiting. He had to be available for the people. Today, Rabbanim go away to a hotel, so this way they don't have to deal with the shaylas. Baruch Hashem. They don't know what's asking them any shaylas. But that's a real rabbi. That means you're there for your people. Your mamash not going to drink your dal kaisis because you feel you have to be able to pass in shaylas. Rav Moshe uses this svar in a tshuva. Rav Moshe's masber once, why don't we bench ala kais during the week? You ever realize on Shabbos, everyone runs to bench ala kais. During the week, no one benches ala kais. What's the difference? So Rav Moshe says very posh, because during the week you got to be at work. You got to pass in shaylas. You're a rabbi. You got to answer shaylas. You can't answer shaylas if you drink wine. So therefore, you can't bench ala kais. But the Shabbos, the assumption is, I guess there's less shaylas on Shabbos or whatever it is. So that's when you can have, that's when you can drink the wine. That's what Rav Moshe says in the tshuva. He says, that's posh. Why? That's the minhag. Because it's a funny thing. On Shabbos, everyone runs to bench ala kais. And on a regular Tuesday, no one ever benches ala kais. No one even thinks about it. The part of the answer is because you don't always have wine available. And, you know, you go out to eat to the bagel store, you go to the pizza store, they're not going to serve you wine. Shabbos, wine's everywhere. But often in your house on supper, you have wine. Right? If you have three male adults sitting together, you have the same wines in the fridge on Shabbos as there in the week. That's not the minhag either. We don't bench ala kais even during the week. But it's a question. But that was Rabbi Sol Zolti took over from Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rabbi Sol Zolti's first sefer he wrote was not so popular because it was written on the Sefra. That's why no one learns it. Because no one learns Sefer in the first place, so they're not going to learn a Sefer on it. But he was a big Talmud Chacham. So he wrote a Sefer called Mishnas Yaivitz. It was really Shailos and Tshuvas. Like the old school, like, you know, like from the Gedolim of the 1800s, we take all their Shailos and Tshuvas and use them for Lomdus. They never wrote it for Lomdus, they wrote it for Lomaisa, Shailos, for practical halachic Shailos. So he wrote two volumes. One was on Archaim, I think one was on Chayshim Mishpat. So he writes like this. He asks the same kashas as Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov happens to have about, I don't know, 10 pages in Emes LeYaakov on Hatovas Dambris. He discusses the sugya heavily. He had a lot of good stuff there. I only took pieces of it. So Rabbi Tzal Zolti has the same kashas as Rabbi Yaakov, but he comes up with the following idea. He said that this is number 5. Asher nirim muchrach comes up with a gevaldik cheshbon. Again, what's the kasha? You have two pieces of Yushalmi. The first part of Yushalmi says that Noilad Mol needs a bris because of Himal Yimal. The second half of Yushalmi says Noilad Mol needs a bris because of Arla Kvusha. Well, again, if you have Arla Kvusha, I don't need the pasuk. Says Rabbi Tzal Zolti, Asher nirim muchrach the Arla Kvusha lechashiva Arla. He learns the pshat like this. Avad, an orla kvush is not a real orla. We don't know what this is. We assume that the foreskin got merged with the thigh, and that's not a real orla. So what's the whole cheshbon? So he says, v'leka ba'ikka mitzvah smila, taino asosha orla. It doesn't have the typical run-in-the-mill type of mitzvah, which is removing the orla. Ela da'rezed din orla miyuchad. This is a special orla. Orla kvusha doesn't mean that it's a suffix, maybe it's a real orla. It's a unique group on its own. It's called Arla Kvusha, a family to itself. What do you do with an Arla Kvusha? Says Rabbi Tzal Zolti, the exerce a kasuv of Himol Yimol is that when you find yourself in this strange situation of a new group of Arla, what do you do with that? You do a Tavas Dambris. I mean, when Yushami says Arla Kvusha, that's not alone a reason to justify Bris Mila, because an Arla Kvusha is not an Arla. What is Arla Kvusha? It's a type, a category onto itself. Well, how do you know what to do with such a category? Teretz is Himol Yimol. From Himol Yimol, I learned that when you're presented with a very strange situation of a Arla Kvusha, a new group of Arla, that type of Mila needs to be cut off, or needs to be dealt with a Tavas Dambris. Therefore, he says, it's taka two separate things. Therefore, the two parts of Yushami are not contradictory. They complement each other. Saying it's an Arla Kvusha doesn't answer the question, and Himol Yimol defines how you deal with an Arla Kvusha. That's how Rabbi Tzal Zolti deals with the Stira and the Yushami. Interesting Mahalach.
Make a
what?
What
we're going to talk about the bracha in a second. We're going to get to that. We have to deal with that heavily.
If Himo Yimo, if it's a separate, if Hatovas Dambris is separate from Himo, from Mila, then why is Himo Yimo alluding to Hatovas Dambris?
So he's going to learn that Himo Yimo is alluding to a case when you have a strange type of an arla. What do you do with it? So instead of cutting it regularly, you do this. That's how he learns the exact custom. Right. All right. According to him, it's a little bit more of a expanding on the word Mila. Mila doesn't just mean to cut an orla, it means to do something else, right? The Fiza, it's a little bit of an expansion on the words. Right? It's a good point. That's the way he comes out and learns it. So now, we started talking about this last week, that there's about 4 or 5 Shitas Rishonim. Maybe 6. Probably 6. Shitas Rishonim. And how does this all play out Lamaisa? Now, if you remember, the reason why we got started with the Sugya was not to talk about Neuil Mol, it was not to talk about Ger. It was really to talk about a baby that had its Mila before day 8, or a baby that has Bris Mila at nighttime. But Lined, we'll get back to that. But before we get to that, we have to deal with, I think, these types of cases, and that will perhaps allow us to understand the later cases. So again, we have a Machlokes in the Gemara, which type of baby needs a Bris, a Tavas Dam Bris. Is that a noilad mal or that's a gershon's guy? So Taisvah starts off at number 6. Taisvah says, Hashto mashma di yoyse yesh la hatzvah hatofa le noilad kishu mal, mila his gar kishu mal. The simple reading of the Gemara leads one to conclude that you need to do a tofas dambris. Why? More by a kata than by a ger. Why? Dala noilad, dala noilad kuliyama moida. Because by noilad mal, everyone agrees. At least according to Rishon ben Elazar, will be ger ikaplukta. And by ger, there's a machloikis. For Im Kain says, Taisus lakamon, the pasuk Rav aloch kitanakama. Now, when Rav said the aloch is like the tanakama, we mentioned this when we learned the Gemara. That had no bearing on ger. Rav never talked about ger. So we don't know what Rav held about ger. Says Taisus, no, we do. Although Rav was talking about Noel Mo, we can conclude that what we'd hold about ger. Why? Taisus makes a very, very large leap. And Taisus says, well, if a Noilid Mohol doesn't need a bris, Kol Shekin a Ger doesn't need a bris. Because if anything, it would be more logical that a Noilid Mohol would need the bris. Because according to Rishon ben Elazar, that's where Beisham and Beis Halev an argument. But says Taisus, once I prove that Ger doesn't need, I'm sorry, that Noilid Mohol doesn't need, Kol Shekin Ger doesn't need. Now the obvious kasha is, that's a very big jump. Why? Maybe the Noilid Mohol doesn't need, because he doesn't need to become Jewish. He is Jewish. So his bris is just a ceremony. So if you don't have what to cut, so you don't do the ceremony. But maybe the geirus requires to do a bris milah. So you might have to do something. Now, what's the counter argument to that? That's clearly not true. Haraya Isha. And Isha becomes Jewish without a bris milah.
But she can't.
Oh, so maybe a Noel Mohol is also a can't. That's the point of argument. We'll see some Chalikis behind him. How do you look at a Noel Mohol? Is a Noel Mohol basically same case as saying you're like an Isha? You can't do a bris. Yes, the Torah wants you to do a bris when it's applicable. If it's not applicable, so you'll say, no, we have a backup plan. A Tavas Dam Bris. Mechatesa. Who said that's the backup plan?
And isn't this the Taisa's in the Dawn?
Well, Taisus is quoting a bunch of different shots. He's not really taking a stand. We'll see other Rishayim do take a stand.
Okay, because, I mean, the other
Taisus sounds like a Tavis Dam Bris is a Dovah Lach
Shalat. Yeah.
So this is Taisus. Now, if you just skip for a second down to number 7, let's see a little bit more on Taisus. Then Taisus quotes the Bahag. Says the Bahag, the Bahag loy posku kain. The Bahag doesn't agree with Taisus. Elo posku de cotton ain't sarach. He holds a cotton does not need a Tavis Dam Bris. The Gerd sarach. But a Gerd does need. Ubikatan Vadik Din Posk says Taisus, I like this part of the Bahag. Why? Because Katan, that's like the Tanakamu. That Noel Mohol doesn't need a Tavas Dam Bris. Kimash Musa. Ubiger, aye, so why does he hold the Ger does need? Nami Nira Lirisha Samkahi Divamis. He backs it up from a Gemara Yivamis, a very important Gemara Yivamis. What does the Gemara say in Achilis, the fourth parak? The Tanya, I reish above, I'm a Malti Vlaitavalti. Guy walks in the bed and says, you should know, I already had a Bris. But I didn't have tefillah yet. So let's just do the last part of the process. Give me a tefillah, and I can be on my merry way. I can join Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Machloik is matfilin oisis. So put him in the mikvah. Umabakach. What do you have to lose? Divrei Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yosi Amar, ain't matfilin. Rebbe Yosi says, no, he can't go into the mikvah. So fact Tais is Vim Timtsa, Loim Adain Tzachlat Admadan Bris. This guy shows up, so he claims he had a bris already. So we can check, and we'll see if there's a foreskin. If there's no Arla, so, and you hold, you don't need a Tavas Dan Bris, so what's the hold up? Throw him into the mikvah. Let's go. Says Taisvis, Vimtim Solem de Ain Sachadam, if you hold, you don't need to do a Tavas Dam Bris, bin his guy gives you mall, there'll be Oisi, Amai Matvilin, Harehu Mall of Anenu. What more do you want to do? He has no bris, we'll check it. If it's gone, it's gone. My nafkemina, imloy mall, Oisi Bezdin, loyel, Arve Mall of a Givanima. Who cares if it was by Bezdin, if it was done by a medical procedure? He is an Erlulis fellow. El Avade Tzarech Lat of Man of Dam Bris. No. Elamai, you need to do something, and therefore you have to have a Tavas Dam Bris. So Taisus backs up the sheet of the Bahag with the Taisus and Yavamis. What's going to be the obvious kasha now? If this Gemara is correct, so what's Taisus going to do with this Gemara? Taisus holds Noilid Mohol doesn't need a Tavas Dam Bris. So how do you read this Gemara? This raya of Taisus is so strong. Taisus says, I see from the Gemara and Yavamis that you need to do something, because if you didn't need to do anything, so why was Ibyasi holding up the Geiris? What are you missing? He doesn't have a meal? Yeah, he doesn't have a meal. We checked, he's gone. So what else do you want to do? So if you hold, you need to do a Tavas Dam Bris, so fine, so we're not done yet. But if you hold, like Taisvis is Shita, which we'll see in a second, is the Shita of the Ireim, that Yitaka don't need to do a Tavas Dam Bris, so what are you waiting for? Why can't you give up? Why can't you move on? So if you look at number 7, the Argos Maimonides in Hilchas Mila quotes from the Yireim, where the Yireim writes Mefurish, Kosav, the Bein Kotan, second line, Bein Kotan Anoil Kishumol, Bein Gershon is Gar Kishumol, Ein Tzarech Lahatef Mene Dambris. No one needs a Tavis Dambris. Why? The Hakayim Elon Kirav. We pass my Kirav, the Omer Halacha Kitana Kam. Now, would this have any bearing on what happens if you do the Bris Mila before the 8th day, or what would happen if you did the Bris Mila at night? I don't know. This psak of the Yireim, or psak of Taisvis, that a Noel Mohol doesn't need a Tavaz Dambris, and a Geshe Zgari doesn't need a Tavaz Dambris, would this also include someone who had an incorrect Bris Mila? Is a Geshe Zgari equivalent of a baby that got his Bris on that third day? Maybe, we'll see in a second. Might be telling the Lomdus. But that's the sheet of the Yireim.
So, how's Yireim passing about Geshe Zgari based on...
He made the same... Because he made the same Cheshvin as Taisvis. He made that same jump. Right, and again, we do need to talk about that. The Birchas Avram talks about this. Avram Erlinger has a piece where he explains that jump. It does need further conversation.
Why wouldn't we say it's the same thing? Because if he's taking the attitude that he's no Orla, is no Orla.
Oh, good. So we're going to have to see. The Ger might have, well, the Noel Mol part is probably the equivalent, right? Unless you argue that no, Noel Mol never had an Orla. An eight-day-old baby that had the Birchas the third day, he was an Orla for day one and day two.
But Yireim is not looking into any other situation.
But again, the two cases are Noel Mol and Gershon Isgar. Now, Gershon Isgar, when he comes to us, he has no Orlo, and a Noel Mol never had an Orlo. But a baby that was born with an Orlo, that was supposed to be cut off on day 8, but was cut off on day 3, do you look at that he had an Orlo and it was just incorrectly removed? We'll see in a second a Tosfos in Yevamos that discusses that. So, Frektich Sam Seifer, what does the Yireim do with this Gemara in Yevamos? Very strong question. It's really saying kash on Taisvis. The Gemara in Yevamos is clear that you need to do a Tavaz Dambris by a ger. So how can these Rishonim hold you don't need to? So Chacham Sofer writes, I apologize, he got cut off. He writes, Sarich loymar desvilei ke'araza. That was like the Baal Amor. What's the Baal Amor? The Baal Amor had a whole new way of learning that Gemara. The Baal Amor learned that the reason why you need to do something is because with Chayshish, maybe this guy is really an Orla Kvusha. Maybe this ger that walks into us and we look at him and we say, Orla Kvusha. Not that he was already gemalt. No, it might be an Orla Kvusha. So therefore, it's a very big chiddush in the Gemara. Therefore, says the Baal Amor, Chayshish for Orla Kvusha. So that's why he has to have a Tavaz Dambris, because of Orla Kvusha. That's a great teretz. There's only one problem. We're going in the Yireim. The Yireim holds Noilad Mol and Tzorchel Tavaz Dambris. Why? Because even if he is an Orla Kvusha, we still don't care. So how does this answer help for the Yireim? This teretz is very nice. We'll see at the end for Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel draws the distinction between a Noilad Mol and a Ger. But according to the Yireim, Noilad Mol also doesn't need a Tavaz Dambris. Why? Because we don't care if it's an Orla Kvusha. So how can he learn the Baal Amor over here? Those two shittos don't work together. So it's a very shtark kasha how the Yireim is going to learn the Gemara in Yevamos.
Well, you hold you need that Tavaz Dambris. If the guy said, listen, I was swallowed in the hospital by some guy doctor. So he had the Orla, it was removed.
Right.
While he was a guy, you would be something like that or not?
So that, according to the Baal Amor, no. According to the Baal Amor, we have, again, maybe if he had real documentation of it, but Stamazay is the Baal Amor is choshish for the muta, and this fellow is an Orla Mol. That is an Orla Kvush. That's how he understands that shittah.
Rabbi Huda says that he already has a Milo, you don't make him do a Tavaz Dambris. Is that because
we
believe him? Or is it because he holds that a
Gair doesn't need a Tavaz Dambris? That's what I thought. I thought
it was
the second, because we just hold that
Gair
and
Tzarek. Because he has a Migo, right? The guy says, what does he say?
He says Tavalti
Malti
Veloy Tavalti.
Right.
So he could have said,
he could have had both, or he had the...
Unless there's a way of proving to him, right. Unless Tefillah had a proof. Tefillah needs Bezdin.
Exactly. More reason why you believe him.
I'm not sure. Really? Yeah, I don't know. I hear what you're saying. So again, let's go back to the
shoot. Like
so that's what some goes on to say. He says, even though normally, he says, he goes over here, he goes like, that's the Baal Amor's chat, and we'll see why the Baal Amor learns like that. He learned like that because he had to answer up some other kashas in the sugya. But that's the chiddush of the Baal Amor. We'll see how the Ramban and him argued about this nekuda. If we go back to Tosfos for a second, let's talk about the Bahag for a second. So we talked about the Yireim and Tosfos. Let's talk about the second shita, the Bahag shita. What's the Bahag shita? That a Noilin Mol, he does not need a Tavaz Dambris, but a Gersh in the sky does. The question is, why in Lomdus should it be that way? And that's the question. So we mentioned last week from the Tosfos Rosh, and it's really a Tosfos in Yevamos. The Tosfos in Yevamos says, what's the difference between a Noilin Mol and a Gersh in the sky? So if you look over number 10, this is a sefer called Bad Kodesh. This is written by Roberto Pavarsky. So he times like this. Much of what he says is also a similar idea as found by Rabbi Asher Weiss, but we'll see where they go their different paths and how they understand the idea over here. So the Pavarsky is also like this. Tyson Yevamos says, Pshat in the Bahag. Again, what did the Bahag held? The Bahag held that a Katan Shenoy Lel Mol does not need anything, but a Gersh Iskayer does need something. So when we read our Tyson in Shabbos, we thought he got it from the Gemara in Yevamos. But the question is, what's the lumdus behind it? What's the lumdus, the difference between a katan shenoylad mol and gersh eskayer? They both come to the table without orlos. What's the difference? What the history was? So a katan was born that way, while the ger, well, it was man-made that way. He was born with an arla. He just had it cut off by a doctor in a hospital 10 years ago. Pashup shat, they should be the same. When they come to the table now, they both don't have arlas. Yet the bahag draws the distinction. A katan shenayla mol doesn't need to do anything. He's exempt. But a ger needs to do something. Why is it that way? So it says with Rebbe Pavarsky, based on Tosis and Yevamos. Tosis and Yevamos writes, Tachiluk hu dishani katan shloihoisala arla meyarla. This katan never had an arla. He was born orlaless. That's the words of Taisus and Yevamos. Same words are found in Taisus and Rosh in our sugya. We photocopied it last week on the last set of Maamar Mekaymus. What do those words mean? The words mean that a katan shenayla mol never had an orla that needed to be cut off. So therefore, if there's never an orla that needs to be cut off, there's always reason to do atavas dan bris. Mashenki and a gerish and his guy who was born with an orla, but that orla was incorrectly removed. That incorrectly removed arla needs to have something done to it. This will be very relevant to our discussion about a baby that was born healthy with an arla and decided to be removed on the third day or remove it on nighttime. That's a regular arla that's incorrectly removed that should be like a gerish and his guy.
And if that ger was born...
We'll talk about it. What happens if you have a gerish and noilad mohol? We'll talk, that's a sheet of the Baal Itter. We'll talk about it. Maybe.
Well, the mila is either... We know that if something's not good from the beginning, it can be rectified in mitzvahs. But if something is good and becomes not good and then is rectified, the Gemara in Sukkot never came out.
Right, but the question really over here is, how do you look at the situation? Right now you have a baby in front of us that has no arla. So the Zog says Tais as well, look at the background. But here's really the million-dollar question. If Atavas Dan Bris is nothing, so then what's the difference? Meaning, if the Torah says do mila, both babies don't have milas. What are you supposed to do?
Obviously, Tavas Dan Bris has to be something in order to it falls on its face.
Exactly. So the question is, what role does the Tavas Dan Bris that chiluk of Taisus and Yevamos should make a difference? So that's what he gets to. This is the nice part of the Sichel Torah. And this is the first part that he writes, is where him and Rav Asher Weiss both have the same idea. He writes, Ubira Inyan Tzarech Lemer. Dine Iker Din Atavas Dan Bris Milvat Krisas Ha'orla Idea Hamila. Right, this is the classic, Bris Torah. There's two dinim in the Ma'aseh Milah. So we spoke a lot. The two dinim is to do the krisus and to be gemalt. Now there's a second din. There's to cut the arla and to also create a bris. This is what Rabbi Shavais also develops. And this is a very nice Torah if you need to speak at a bris milah. Not the lomdusha part. No one cares about that, believe it or not. I don't know why.
They're out the door.
People still get up at bris and think people want to hear your shtickel Torah in Ma'aseh Milah. I don't know why. No one cares about this. Two dinim. They want to eat their bagel and take one for lunch and go catch the train. They really don't care if you know how to learn or not. There was a bumper sticker that there's a car in front of me. I was with my daughter and it says, "Are you a lomdin?" So my daughter's 10. She's trying to read it. So I told her it says lomdin. So she says, "Are you a lomdin?" I said, "I have no idea. I don't know what's a lomdin." She said, "Do you think you're a lomdin?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know what a lomdin is." She said, "You know how to read the Gemara, you know how to say a pshat in the Gemara, this, that, and the other." I'm not sure what the definition of that bumper sticker was supposed to be. Are you a lomdin? With a bunch of question marks afterwards. I don't know what it's relevant for. Today, they don't hire you to be a lomdin. There's no job market to be a lomdin. But okay, that's the way the world goes. So at a bris.
That's what's in the rear bumper.
I say, people feel that the bris is their time to. I just saw my wife show me now that there's a system that you can get your own podcast. You can, for a certain amount of money, you can get a podcast to the whole world. You can share with the world all your shitas and all your dates and all your stickle tires, all the shurim you want. So you do that at your podcast and at your bris, let people go and go to work. But a classic bris, and people like to say over a lot of fancy Torah. But over here, he's saying a very nice point over here that's lomdish, but also a very nice musa point. He's saying that not only do we cut off the foreskin to do a ma'aseh milah, but there's a bris. If you ever think about it, what's the word bris? Bris doesn't mean to cut. Bris means a bond, a treaty. So he says that part of that bris, that experience where we become united, one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is not done through the cutting of the arla, it's done through the dam. That dam, the Yetzias Adam, that toughest dam bris, it creates a bris between us and Klal Yisrael.
Which is the fact that there's no arla is the bris.
No, he's saying not. He's saying that's the krisus. That's what cuts it off. That's the shtickel Torah. Rabbi Shavai says the same idea. He writes this. The reason why I didn't put down Rabbi Shavai is because I only have that sefer that came out when Reb Shai made a bris. Some of it's in Minchas Rosh and other places. I couldn't find this piece. A lot of them, I just look back to Parshas Lech Lecho or Parshas Tazria. This piece that I found, it's a big sefer. I couldn't find it in anywhere else, so I just, you'll trust me that he writes that like this in his sefer. He quotes this idea. It's not just to cut off the arla. Before we do Rashi, it comes back to our Rashi that says what? With the dam, there'll be a bris. Through the dam, that creates a bond. V'hinei b'vaday eim kar ha-mitzvah b'zachari v'ikra humash amma b'teira b'mitzvah mila v'ataz b'yisi tishmar v'reishin ne'mar inyin bris b'teiras ha-mila el de'bedivri kabbalo l'manu gili milsa de'inyin ha-bris na'asei de'idam bris. Avada, no one's going to say that bris mila means just to cut blood. Avada, that's not what the Torah wants. But we learn from the Navi that there's perhaps a second element, a second byproduct of a bris mila, that it creates a certain level of connection. Okay, that part Rabbi Shavai says as well. Here's where they differ. He says, "Ulchein gam vad ma'isa hamila shekrisas ha'orla tzar gam kedavas dambris." That's why every bris mila has to have two parts, based on Rashi and Sanhedrin, Taisus and Nedarim, because one part is the cutting off of the orla that makes you ois orl. Now you're not an orl anymore. Now you can eat truma, and now you can eat karm pesach. That takes you up. But to get to the next step in your relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you have to have dam for whatever the reason is. V'ukiim dinoisif b'mitzvas hamila. Okay. If you accept this notion, now you can understand the Bahag. Because what did the Bahag say? He says the Pshat is like this. When do you have to have a follow-up to the Arla? When do you have to have a relationship that's forged through blood when you also cut off the foreskin? When you had a foreskin that needed to be cut, and either you did or you didn't, so the follow-up or the connection to that is the removal of blood. So therefore, says Rebel Pavarsky, that's all fine if you had an Erla. Meaning, there's no such din, lichshalatzme, to cut out blood. It's only in relation and connection to cutting off the foreskin. So if you had a foreskin that should have been cut and wasn't cut, so you can't get that, so at least you'll do that tavas dambris. But if you never had a foreskin to start with, just to prick blood and blood come out, is not what the Torah wanted. That's what he understands the Bahag's Pshat Akon to Taisin Yivamis. Not the way we learned it is. We learned Pshat is that when you're an Erla Mohol, so then you never had an Erla. So if you never had an Erla, you never had a Siba Sachiv. So if there's never a Siba Sachiv, there's never a reason to make it up. Mashiach and the Gershon's guy, he was born with an Erla, which we'll call that a Siba Samachayiv, which was never done properly. He's saying differently. He's saying that the whole idea of a Tavad Ambris is a direct connection to having an Erla. So if you never had an Erla, you never have to do it.
No,
he's not. Right. He's not going with this pshat of Orla Kavush. Right. He's not. He's assuming. He's assuming that there's no Orla Kavush over here. That's. Well, again, if you hold it's Orla Kavusha, so then the whole Bahag doesn't make sense. Okay. I'm saying then that Bahag himself doesn't work out if he's going with Orla Kavusha, right? That well, Bahag doesn't work out. Yeah.
Either Rebel Barsky or Barsher White say the Indian of Dam making the oath bris. Because, like we learned by Korban Pesach, in other words, because that dam, and that's when we became a nation.
He doesn't say.
Doorpost, but maybe that's pshat.
Could be.
Why dafka them? Because that's when we became a nation.
I think so. He doesn't explain. Neither of them really. They don't really explain too much. So the way Rabbi Asher Weiss goes with this, he takes the same idea, but he sends that. He says that's the difference. By a Neulin Mol, so Neulin Mol, there's no Meisa, there's no forming of a bris. That bris is formed is automatically. But a Gershon Isgayer, he needs to somehow join the party. How does a Gershon Isgayer join into Klai? So how does he get that bris? So he needs that tough as numbers. That's the way he says Pshat in the Bahag. Okay, so that's the Bahag.
Sean, those in Yarmouth, the Rav mentioned before, they used to use this clamp. Might be a shiloh, was the bris was
that? Right, that's what Moshe. Moshe thought of this Pashat. Without this element of the bris, you're lacking a part of the bris meal. Okay, that's the sheet. So far we worked on two sheets. We worked on the Urayim and the Bahag. Let's start the Ramban. At least we'll start the Ramban for today. The Ramban writes the following. The Ramban is being mechalik the other way. He's going to draw a distinction between a Gerish and a Skyer and a Neulin Mohol. He says, V'yesh l'sayeh adivir Rishayim. I want to bring a proof to those Rishayim. The Kibbutam Rabbi Yossi she'in a Ger. The Karnas Tachas Kan V'shchin El B'milu V'tfilo. We hold that the only way a Ger becomes Jewish is if he has Milu and Tfilo V'loik Amina Me'imois. We don't learn from our Imois. So therefore, Gerish and a Skyer Kishu Mol. The Ger was in the Skyer when he already had a Bris. V'adai Tzorach La'atav Mimenu. He needed to have a Bris. Why? Very important words. She'in Nichnosim Tachas Kan V'yashchina B'tfilo B'lvat. You can't join Klal Yisrael just with Tfilo. And the first meal that you did as a guy doesn't work. So what's the Ramban saying? That you know why a Gerish Iskari needs to have a bris mila? Because how else is he going to join Klal Yisrael? How else? Good. That's what he's going to say in a second. Says the Ramban, you can argue on that. Why? The Gerish Iskari kushu mol, hailu mol, hu legamri, have like Isha. What are you talking about, says the Ramban? He'll be like an Isha. And the way he'll get it is just with Tefillah. So why don't you say every man doesn't need a bris mila? The answer is that's possible versus impossible. Okay. Says the Rabbi, no, this is also an Efsha. Why? Because he could do something else. He could do a Tavas Dambris. So therefore, the Ramban sheet is that Gershon is Geyer, he needs to do Hatavas Dan Bris, and we'll see now that he needs to do Hatavas Dan Bris. When he does Hatavas Dan Bris, he makes a bracha. He makes a bracha on the Hatavas Dan Bris of a Gershon is Geyer. We'll see in a second. He quotes it over here. The Gemara quotes in Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin. She says,
"Venerely." It should be lachnis, so based on what we're saying.
We're going to talk. We're going to get to all of these things in Mitzvah Shem one of these days. Venerely, Shamol Ger Va'evich and his Gar Kishumol Bevorich Asher Kedushon Mitzvayisav Lahatev Dam Bris Min Hagayim Oy Min Havadim She'ain Atov Es Dam Zub Nei Safik. You're not doing this because it's Safik or Lekfusha. Who says because it's Safik or Lekfusha? He's Bavoni the Baal Amor. This is where the Ramban argued on the Baal Amor. The Baal Amor said that even a Gershon's Geyer needs to do a Tavas Dan Bris because maybe he's an Oil Mol. Says the Ramban, that's not the Pshat. That's not why a Gershon's Geyer, because maybe he's the minority who's an Oil Kvusha. He needs to do it because he's a Chayovim. Why? El Vade Chayov Manulat Men and Dam Zushal Bris Ubemenich Nos and Tachas Kan Fechshin. Because if not, how else will you join Klal Yisrael? So what does this Ramban sound like? That the Mila is not just a Hechatimtza to be allow a Geiris, it itself is the Geiris. This is a Chelik of the Geiris. It's not merely that I can't be a Ger if I have an Orla. It sounds like from the Ramban stronger than that. It sounds like from the Ramban that one of the stages, or one of the Chalakim of a Maisa Geiris is the Mila. I will be Srol with Shanoil Kishu Mol. But if you have a Yid that's Noil Mol, Kimish ain't Tzarek Latif Elam Ne Safik Orla Kvusha. He's assuming that the only reason why you're doing the Bris is because of a Safik Orla Kvusha. Hayru Hagayin Shem Avarchim, She ain't Zubrila. There's no, it's not really a meal of wedding. Shem Avarchim Latif Shaf Shay Satifa Ain't Elam Misham Safik. It's a Safik. So what's the Ramban Shita? The Ramban Shita is they both need Hatavas Dan Bris, but for totally different reasons. A Katan needs it because Safik Orla Kvusha. A ger needs it not because of suffix. He needs it because if not, how else will he join Tachas Kan Feshchen? So he's assuming that Tavas Dan Bris will be the replacement of the gerus,
right,
of the Mila.
By Nol and Mol, how does that Tavas Dan Bris resolve the suffix?
By it?
If there's an Orla Kavusha, all you do is take out a drop of blood, you still have an Orla Kavusha.
Right, so that's what you're going to have to somehow explain. That might be part of the Xeris Akasa, then the Yusham is Himal Yimal. Maybe that's really like that is really all these cheshbon that somehow this will fix. The question is, why don't you argue the other way? And that's the Meiri's argument to number 12. Tana de Meiri, why doesn't a Nolan Mohol need something to make him tachas kan fi eshchina? The Ramban says that a Nolan Mohol, we only care about Safik Arlo Kvusha. So the Meiri disagrees. The Meiri has a fundamental. It's a gewaldig machlokes rishonim. That's what we all assume. That we all assume you don't need something to make you tachas kanfe. Says the Meiri number 12. There are reshitas that hold. They hold you make a bracha when you do atofa. But me she'im basofik or leklak and ger shekvar nimol. Very a cotton avu nichnas tachas kanfe eshchina bebris. A cotton does it. I mean, he's arguing on the Ramban. The Ramban says you got to make a bracha when you do a neilad mol because that's how he joins tachas kanfe eshchina. Says the Meiri, what are you talking about? A katan also needs to join tachas kan feishchina, and how does he join? The Teretz is you can also join without it. Vimnei shekvar ozu mizer Yisrael, you'll tell me what a katan noilan mol? He's already Jewish. Not true, says the Meiri. Harry Amru b'shloish devarim dechasay Yisrael tachas kan feishchina b'milu tefilu b'karbon. Unbelievable Meiri. According to the Meiri, every bris mila is doimit to what a ger goes through. That the mila of a katan is not merely a mitzvah deraisa, but it's a chelik of making him tachas kan feishchina. The fundamental machlokes we're showing to the Meiri and the Ramban about how do you understand the role of mila by a baby? Is it merely just a ma'aseh mitzvah l'chshla atzmoi, or is it a chelik of some process of
again? It's not,
again, I'm not sure what it means to be tachas kan ve'eshchina. He's not going to be not Jewish. He might have a din or, but this is a gevaldige machlokes we're showing between the Ramban and the Meiri. B'lineder, next week we'll talk more about the shitas we're showing, and then we'll work our way up to the Rambam, and then finally come back to the discussion of night and toich.